Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Time for the 49ers Rush Podcast. And here's your host, John Chapman.
Let's go. We are 1 week, baby. It is Thursday to Thursday until the NFL draft, and I'm so excited, which means it's Coach Approach today. Ant, how we doing, my friend?
Doing great, and you're right. 7 days away from the draft. Finally, all the conversation comes to a head, and we can just find out exactly what the 49ers are actually going to do. And I think this is an exciting time. Everyone's kind of ramped up the questions. Everyone's ramped up the conversation. It's a fun time. Every team right now has optimism about what their team is going to do in the 2025 season. And I think that is something that's very unique to the sport that I absolutely love, because we're talking about it months in advance from the season. And that's something that not a lot of leagues and professional sports have. But the NFL does it right, and the draft has become one of the best phenomenons. And you got to give credit to guys like Mel Kiper that kind of help, you know, guide this, the mock drafts and everything. It's going to be crazy. Looking forward to it.
Hey, man, I hate to do this to you, Ant. My Mavericks, who has been rough talking about my Mavericks, they took out your boys, and so I apologize. I love the Kings secretly. But the Mavs are my team, even after the stupid dunk. I hate Nico. But could you imagine covering the NBA where you have 1 week, like the season ends and then the draft, boom. Like you have 1 week. The amount of time we have now to the draft is the entire draft process for the NBA. Like such a terrible process the way that they do it. I'm thankful the NFL, yeah, it dominates the entire calendar, but that's okay for us who work all the time. And I love all the hashtag Coach Bro. So I do want to say I am sorry for your Kings. And anything else you want to throw out there, I'm going to allow you time, because the Mavericks are next. I'll be doing the same moratorium for myself here in 2 days.
It's very easy for Kings fans. Like, this is just the norm for us, right? It's like the habitual thing. The 49ers are the Kings are going to struggle. They're going to lose. This will never hurt me as much as the early 2000s, right? Losing to the Lakers. So I'm already dead inside as a Kings fan from that. There's absolutely nothing that could happen now that's going to hurt me.
Well, I love you, man, and I apologize. It was two teams I wanted to keep going, to be honest with you. And look at this, Rob Lauder, Lieutenant Supplejack in the chat. Way too much draft knowledge on one screen. Morning, boys. I'm doing my 30. We do this every year now. Where me and Rob get together and we do a mock draft just with the 30 visits. And they didn't even use all their 30 visits. They did 28, I think is the final number. But so that's going to be Monday, so stay tuned for that. And for everybody that has questions from Ant, which you all should, he is the most in tap with what the 49ers look through, especially on the offensive line, but other positions as well. He is doing an Ask Ant episode tomorrow. So here's what you do. You can leave it in the comments of this live show. That's the easy way. The best way is to go to 49ers Cutback YouTube channel and leave it. You've got a post on there, Ask Ant, and then he'll answer that tomorrow. So if you do both, you probably got a good chance of getting that covered, especially if it's a good question. So do that. And then on top of that, this is going to be our first segment for today. Predicting the 49ers pick. We have started a brand new Gmail account. Shout out to my man, Ben, NY Niners, as you know him. Everybody gets to submit 10 players. We used to do 5, and like one or two people would get one right. So we've upped it to 10. any level, it could be first, second, third round. If the 49ers pick one of your 10, whoever gets the most correct, I'm going to send you some free stuff, probably like a t-shirt or I don't know what I'm going to give away. But here's what you've got to do. It's scrolling across the bottom of the screen currently. You're going to email 49ersrush.pickthepicks@gmail.com. So 49ersrush.pickthepicks@gmail.com. And if you forget that, it's in the description of this audio video. Just email us 10 names. Whoever gets the most wins. Tie goes to earliest submission. So if three people get four correct, whoever emailed first, that's why you want to get on it. So that is open. 49ersrush.pickthepicks@gmail.com. So let's start this off, Ann. You're first. We're not going to ask you for all 10. Give me four players that if you were to bet, are the most likely for the 49ers to pick. And hey, you guys could steal these answers if you want, but you got to come up with six on your own. Who would be your top four? Any round could be, I think first round is probably the hardest round to predict almost, which is weird. Usually it's the other way around. Who are your guys?
Yeah, it is hard with round one, especially with how many edge rushers they've met with that are going to go in round one. That made it a little bit more difficult. So the first one on my list, he's done a 30 visit. I think this dude has been on my radar since the very beginning. That's going to be defensive tackle Omar Norman Lott. I think pass rush, the effects that he has there, and I get it. You know, a lot of question marks about his run defense. I think he could get better. I think he's going to go higher than people think, and I think that's why the 49ers are looking at him. I think they have to go interior defensive line. So Omar Norman Lott is my number one. Number two is going to be Kobe Bryant, the cornerback out of Kansas. His run grade was a lot better than people think for a guy his size, over a 92 run grade with PFF. I think that this dude is a complete cornerback. That's only question marks is how is he going to hand up physically? You can put more weight on this guy because the fact is this dude gets after it when it comes to coverage. And I think that he reminds me of, you know, a couple of guys that have been in the league that are really successful, even though they're a little bit lighter. So I think Kobe Bryant seems like a nice target, especially mid rounds, which is where the 49ers are probably going to want to hit cornerback. So I like him a lot. Elijah Roberts, the defensive end slash defensive tackle out of SMU is another guy, right? Omar Norman Lott and Roberts are similar in build, similar in size. The way that they handle playing, I think he would move to the inside and play defensive tackle as a three tech. I think the 49ers are sniffing around him that maybe late in this draft they could go ahead and address defensive tackle with a guy they feel that could be a nice rotation and maybe the eventual replacement for Kevin Givens. I think that's kind of the realm that we're looking at. And my last one, Miles Frazier, the offensive guard out of LSU, big physical. This dude can handle the guard spot. And I'm listening to John Lynch when he says, we need to address left guard. And I think this guy's a different type of player than Ben Bartsch or Nick Sakel. He's built more in the Spencer Burford type mold as far as he gets after it in the run game. And so I think that Frazier is actually the best of both worlds, where I think he's got a good enough anchor and can also run block. So those are my four guys. But I got to admit, there's no guarantee that when we show up on Thursday, these four guys won't change. But I think right now these are four guys I think have a really good shot to be 49ers.
And I got to give it to the strategist, right? Because, like, do you go with the sporadic approach and you try to hit all the different positions, or do you double down and sacrifice? You pick two running backs, knowing they're probably not going to do that, all that stuff. The amount of strategy that goes into this, I love. It's chess, not checkers. Javier asks, when's the deadline for sending picks? Before the draft starts. So that would be Thursday, which is 5 p.m. Is draft time start. So you have to submit it before the draft actually starts. But, you know, we're not going to be picky or whatever else. So, like, the way I would do it, here's my four. I'm doubling up because I'm like, okay, what are the positions that perhaps the 49ers will target for sure? And what's the limited, right? So I'm going linebacker. I'm doing Chris Paul Jr. and Jeffrey Bosa because I'm saying, man, one of those two will be on there. So, like, that's my philosophy. Then I'm going running back, Bashel Tootin or Jaden Blue. Like, Kyle Shanahan types, I think one of those two land here. Those are my four. To be honest with you, if I was going to keep going, I would add Marcus Yarns, and I'd probably add Merritt, the running back, Jaquiski Merritt. I think that he could be one of the – did I say his name right? I'm not looking at my notes right now. Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt. There it is. from Arizona. Like, I can see him being a seventh rounder. But I can't wait to look through everybody's. Me and Ben, we're going to siphon through all these emails. Again, email us 49ersrush.pickthepick@gmail.com. You've got a week, but a tie goes to earliest submission. So that is out there. And look at NY Niners. Elijah Roberts has now connected with the 49ers four times, more than any other player. Whew, four times? That's a lot, man. So I think you're into something with Roberts. And again, would he be a D end? Is he a DT? You talked about moving him inside. Is he a hybrid? I don't know where to put him on my chart. I put him at defensive end, but I'm like, I think he's a little bit more of a defensive tackle.
Yeah, I think early, I think he could play, right, a base down defensive end, play against the run a lot like they did with Armstead. You know, guys that they tried to do that with Arden Key. And then eventually have him play defensive tackle and pass rush downs. And then as they get this guy to a NFL pro body, they can move him inside, right? Once he gets to like 290, 295, potentially with some good lean muscle, good weight, that's when I think it translates. Because as long as they can keep this guy's speed and athleticism, he's going to be dynamic on the inside. So I think that that makes a lot of sense for the 49ers when they're talking about Elijah Roberts. Start him outside, move him inside. On obvious pass downs. And I think that's why they're sniffing around Aeneas Peebles, Omar Norman Lott, Elijah Roberts. They're looking for a designated pass rusher early that can get home. And I think that's why you kind of have these guys all in the same realm, because they all have similar bodies and similar skill sets.
Ah, I like it. Look, David's picking up what I'm putting down. He says one of these cornerbacks, whether it's Denzel Burke, Jacob Parrish, or Kobe Bryant, will be a Niner. Exactly correct. Like, that's how I'm building my predict. Because I'm saying nobody's going to get four, so I'm going to do multiple positions. And, man, like, David is somebody that has their pulse on a 49ers-type corner. And, yeah, Denzel Burke, love. Jacob Parrish, my favorite player in the entire draft, regardless of position around. Kobe Bryant, met so many times with the 49ers. So some of you guys are getting, you know, you listen to the shows, and the 49ers are spoiled, and I'm so thankful for that. But yeah, they're starting to figure that out.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
You know that feeling when you're about to score 30% off, but they want your number? Ugh. Give them your Line 2 number instead. It's a second line on your phone, perfect for nabbing promo codes without inviting spam to your party. Sign up for every discount under the sun, then block the junk texts that follow. You get all the perks, but none of the spammy baggage. More codes, less chaos. Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store and get your shopping sidekick today. Because the only thing blowing up your phone should be good deals.
Now, probably one of the best NFL draft people in the world, maybe ever, is none other than The Athletic's Dane Brugler. Just put out The Beast, all that stuff. He did a full 7-round mock draft for the entire NFL. Dude's a stud. Well, here is his draft haul for the 49ers. So I'm going to go through the picks, and then I want Ant to kind of break down what his thoughts are. We'll look at best pick, worst pick, all those things. Don't have to go far for worst pick, in my opinion. He has the 49ers taking Edge, Shamar Stewart, who is one of the 28 official visits, at 11. Carson Swissinger, linebacker, 43. At 75, offensive tackle Anthony Belton. Got a lot of comments. I want to spend some time on Belton today. 100 pick, defensive tackle Omar Norman Lott, which Ant said. 113, running back Damian Martinez. 138, cornerback Bilal Cohn, Western Michigan. He was another one of the visit guys. 147 pick, Tez Johnson, the wide receiver. 160, another Sac State guy. Interior offensive lineman, Jackson Slater. And then seventh round, we got tight end Jackson Hawes, quarterback Max Brosmer, and defensive tackle Elijah Simmons. What are your thoughts on Dane Brugler's full 7-round mock draft for the 49ers?
Well, I think that minus the Shamar Stewart pick, early on, I mean, it seems pretty good. If you told me we were getting Carson Swessinger, Anthony Belton, and Omar Norman Lott, I'm kind of like, hey, I'm liking these top 100 picks. I think it's the edge rusher that I have the most concern about with Shamar Stewart. You're talking projection upside, right? This is the number one athlete in the entire draft when you're talking size and defensive line or offensive line. Like, this dude is a absolute stud that way. The problem is the athleticism doesn't translate to the field consistently, and you don't have any production. And so you're completely projecting. This is a little interesting for Dane Brugger because we've seen the 49ers struggle with projection-type picks early on in drafts. I just don't think they're going to do it. They drafted Ricky Pearsall earlier than they probably should have, even though they didn't want to miss out on him. So that one, to me, kind of is a little bit nerve-wracking for 49er fans. I think 49er fans would rather have a guy like Mikel Williams or even a Landon Jackson or a Nick Scorton, who are bigger defensive ends who maybe aren't as athletic, but you feel like are more consistent players. They're going to play well, and you're going to give up a little bit on the upside, but you're going to get more consistency. And I think that's what the 49ers will worry about, is the boom or bust type pick.
Yeah, I like that. And, man, we had people before we even went live. And shout out to everybody, because I want to spend some time on it. He had the 49ers taking Anthony Belton, offensive tackle, NC State. The 49ers, one of the comments, he says, "What's up, John Hope, all as well. I want to see the 49ers draft Anthony Belton." And, man, they just kept coming with, "What do you think of Anthony Belton on film? And what that looks like." And then Jeff comes in, "Am I the only one that would rather have Charles Grant than Anthony Belton?" So what is your idea just on these two players and why they – I feel like there's a lot of value to be had in the third round with these tackles. Now, usually third-round tackles don't pan out, almost never, to be honest with you. But I feel like that's one of the things this class has to offer.
Yeah, Anthony Belton's interesting because his name came up very early in the process. He was starting to get talked about, 49ers land. He kind of went around, and then it kind of cooled off. And not a lot of people have talked about him recently, but he's a big, big man. I mean, this dude has all the size in the world, and he's athletic enough to play in the 49ers system. Like, this dude can handle it. He can get to the second level. The arm length is not what I was expecting for his size. I thought he was going to be a 34-plus inch arm. He's not. But he's reaches the threshold for what the 49ers see as a offensive tackle. And I do believe that he's got the ability to play left tackle at some point. I think if you drafted him right now, if you wanted to, you could have him compete on the interior and play offensive guard next to Trent Williams. I think he could handle that role. I don't think he's less athletic than Aaron Banks. I think he's more athletic than Aaron Banks when it comes to operating in space. But I think he's got the eventual ability to be a starting left tackle. Is he going to be Trent Williams? No, I don't think so. Is he going to be somebody that reaches that threshold that Chris Furster talks about? Absolutely. And so you get your swing tackle for sure, and then potentially have a guy that could step in at right tackle once Colt McKivitz potentially leaves, or left tackle once Trent Williams retires. So he gives you some versatility. I think right tackle would be the most comfortable for me, I think, as a projection, and when you're getting a guy in the third round. But I wouldn't put it against him being able to play left tackle. So I like him. I think that he fits. It's right close, right? It's right at that level of threshold of athleticism, but I think he's got enough to be able to play within the system.
I like him. Like, I wrote hands, size, and power. He's so good with his hands, very aggressive mauler type, has all the length that you could want, almost 35 inch arms. Like, in a draft with very short length players, his nickname's Escalade, man. Like, big smooth. Like, that's just what he is. He got 32 starts at left tackle. He's got the experience. I like him. The upside is where I'm like, the movement and all those things. And so I don't have a problem. I pushed Charles Grant. I went back and watched after you talked about him the first time. I bumped him up a little bit. So I do have him in the close territory. But back to kind of Dane Brugler's mock draft, I don't like the Shamar Stewart pick at all. Like, that would be my least favorite pick that the 49ers could make in the first round. I don't like it at all. Now, it's at edge. It's an upside. It's a swing for the fences. If you're in the crowd of, man, we've got to get an elite blue chipper at 11, well, then you should probably want Shamar, because he is a swing for the fences type guy. The athleticism, the size, the speed, all those things. He's just not a very good football player, if I'm going to be honest. Like, he has no player IQ. He has no awareness. He just runs as hard as he can, head up into the blocker every single time. Like, and people always talk about how great he is against the run. I don't think he's that great of a run defender. Yeah, he doesn't get moved around or bullied but it's just like whenever I watch his tape, I just see guys run past him all the time. All the time. Like he has no clue where the ball is going ever. Yeah, he's an athletic freak. Where do you have him? Where would you be comfortable? Let's say wipe the slate clean. You have 1 through 100 draft picks in a row. Where would you place Shamar Stewart on a number scale of draft picks, like where he should go?
I think because it's complete projection, I think somewhere between like 45 and 50, I think is a really good spot for him. Because if he hits, he's going to be, you know, dominant. But if he doesn't, he's going to be a complete bust and never going to work out. And I think when you have a boomer bust type prospect like that, you've got to be willing to pay the piper for him. And I think the first round, a lot of people are going to be very nervous about him. And I think he's incomplete when you're talking about a player that should go in the first round. And incomplete players, for me, I start moving them down the board. And I'm probably a hard grader on defensive end especially. And I got him down the board a little bit. I got him as a second round grade. And that's just where I'm going to keep him. There's just not enough production. You talked about he doesn't exactly shed blocks at the level of like a Mykel Williams and some of the other guys, Landon Jackson, that are his size. So I'm curious, you know, where he's going to land. I think somebody's going to end up taking a shot on this guy because they see the elite athletic profile and maybe he hits. But I'm just a little bit leery when I'm talking about, you know, projection versus production. And I think the 49ers have been leaning into production lately. That makes me think that he's, even though they met with him on a 30 visit, I don't know if they're all in on Shamar Stewart.
Yeah, he's my 50th overall player is where I wind up with him. So we're similar. Now, Dane Brugler has him 9 on his list. And shout out to Cowachipto, as always. It says, Dane admits he just loves Stewart's upside and he shouldn't be that high. Now, every single ranker brings their own whatever. Like, Dane Brugler is the founder of the Freaks List. That is Shamar Stewart. And you look at his kind of top 100 every year, he bumps up elite athleticism. So that's why, you know, he has Shamar Stewart 9. And I guarantee you, threshold drafting teams will have Shamar Stewart high. I don't think that the 49ers should do that. If you were forced to pick a defensive end in this class and you're sitting there at 11 and Shamar Stewart, James Pierce, and Mykel Williams are staring at you, what three would you, who would you walk away from? You're the GM. You got three defensive ends, James Pierce, Mykel Williams, Shamar Stewart. Who are you taking?
I think I would eliminate Shamar Stewart first. So it comes down to James Pierce, Mykel Williams. I think Mykel Williams is the cleaner of the prospects because we don't have any concerns about how he handles football, that he loves football. I think if that type of thing has been answered, right, by the 30 visit, James Pierce Jr. came in for a 30 visit with the 49ers. If they feel comfortable that this dude is a player that loves football, is a 49er kind of guy, I like James Pierce's upside as far as being able to pass rush, set the edge against the run. I think Mykel Williams, it would probably be the 49ers' choice if they had to choose between those guys. I think they're doing due diligence with James Pierce in case he falls to 43. Right, you see Landon Jackson potentially another guy that would be at 43 that they've met with. So I think they're doing due diligence in case something happens early on in this draft and they end up addressing offensive line or another position they weren't expecting to have some defensive ends to fall back on. So I think it would be Mykel Williams in this position. And then the question for him is he going to be able to have the bend to consistently be a wide nine defensive end? I think he'll set the edge really nice against the run. He'll be a very solid run stopper, which is great. He disengages one of the best in the entire draft when it comes to defensive end. My question marks are going to be the speed off the edge, which you don't miss with James Pierce Jr. So interesting dichotomy between the two guys, but I think it would be Mykel Williams.
Yeah, I think that's their pick as well. Now, I'm higher on James Pierce than all those guys. And a big reason why, Invader says they haven't drafted a situational pass rusher in round one yet. Here's the thing. I would take James Pierce in the run game over Shamar Stewart. Like, he has a clue what the hell is going on. He can read blocks. He can set the edge. Now, does he have the body and the frame that Shamar does? No. But I'm sorry. The film does not tell me situational pass rusher with James Pierce. Now, there are some work ethic concerns and whatever else. But you're talking elite production. You're talking elite traits. Shamar Stewart's not good against the run for me. I cannot draft somebody that has no awareness whatsoever on the field. And that's why he only has 4 sacks in his entire 3-year starting career. 4 sacks. Like, I'm not an all-out sack guy. I'm not that. But, man, it goes back to just production. And I get really pissed off. Y'all have heard me say this before on the show. When people compare the production of Mikael Williams to Shamar Stewart, I'm just like, are you insane? Like, they're not even close to the same. Like, 14 and a half sacks versus 4.5 sacks in the same amount of starting, and one of the players played through an injury the whole time, the exact same defensive scheme, like, not even comparable. Jeff comes out and says, I'm really starting to like Mikael at 11. Great play diagnosis and controlling his gap. Double teams. Yeah, he does it all. You know, I was on Locked On 49ers with Kroc and Peacock yesterday, and that's basically what they've been harping for a while. Mikael Williams is probably going to be the 49ers pick at 11 if they can't trade back. It just seems to be what it is. And Invader would add in Walter Nolan. If it was down to Mikael Williams or Walter Nolan, I'm going Mikael Williams 10 out of 10 times. I'm lower on Nolan than everybody. I like Nolan and the upside. And I saw somebody say, like, Chris Kucerik is a Walter Nolan guy. And I'm just like, I don't care. Like, Chris Kucerik does not get say-so until he develops somebody. I get that he has a type, and I like Kucerik, but I am not allowing him to make first-round draft pick whatever. I think Mikael Williams has a higher ceiling, has a higher floor. I wouldn't be mad at Nolan, and I understand it, but if these two, so now if we're looking at end versus tackle, what does GM Ant say?
I think they go edge in round one because I think there's too much positional value, and I think when you're looking at the – I did a video yesterday about thresholds for the draft picks, you know, and where you can get a potential starter. And I think with defensive tackle, there's probably a little bit longer a leash to find some of those guys, especially if you're looking for a one tech. You could probably go a little bit further into this draft and find a guy that's capable to start. I think when it comes to defensive end, it's early. You know, where's that threshold? Early round three that you could potentially find somebody – that could start, you know, opposite of Nick Bosa. So I think hitting edge in round one might be more important than hitting defensive tackle, even though defensive tackle is the obvious biggest need for the 49ers right now. It just doesn't make sense to go earlier than that. And I love those guys, Walter Nolan, right? I like Derek Harmon. I think those dudes are studs, and I think they would add a lot of value to the 49ers. But I think because you're picking 11, the edge rushers up top this draft are a little bit more enticing and a little bit more what the 49ers need right now than those defensive tackles that you would pick if you were sitting at 25 or, you know, 25 to 30 in this draft.
Okay, so this leads me to our next point in our notes. Let's say you go edge early or any other position besides defensive tackle early. How late? We know the defensive tackle class is loaded. How late is too late to wait? Because, like, Dade Brugler, right? He had us going edge, then linebacker, then OT. He didn't take a defensive tackle till pick 100. Like, where do you fit on, okay, the biggest need on the team, defensive tackle? I don't think anybody would disagree with that. How late is too late to wait?
I think to get a starter, you have to take one by pick 75. I think if you don't take one around pick 75, that first pick in the third round, you're probably not going to get a guy, especially a three tech, that could start day one. You know, I think that's the range where you're going to have some of those guys like Omar Norman Lott, Joshua Farmer. Those guys are going to go in that third round. And I think if you miss on that, then you're waiting for, you know, guys like Elijah Roberts later on, Aeneas Peebles later on, that are a little bit, you know, different when it comes to run stopping, maybe don't have the same ability as some of the guys early on. And I would even argue that second round is also another place. And I know cornerback is so huge in the second round, you know, Trey Amos and Azare Thomas and all the guys that are there, you'd love to be able to go corner, but that is also a hotbed where you get TJ Sanders and you get guys potentially that fall like Tyreek Williams, who they also met with on a 30 visit. These types of guys are not available throughout the draft. I think Alfred Collins might go in round two. So what do you do? I think that's the biggest concern is, can you mess around and miss out on some defensive tackles? I think that would be a problem because you don't have legitimate starters right now. And that is, the 49ers have never went into a draft since 2017 with needs like this. And so I think you have to address it early. And I'm worried if you wait until 100 and 113, you might miss out on some really talented guys who could potentially start. And then all of a sudden, you're going to have rotational pieces starting or playing behind Kevin Givens and Jordan Elliott. And I think that would be a bad situation for the 49ers.
Yeah. For me, the defensive tackle question and how long you can wait comes down to how many are you committing to draft, right? So, like, if you're drafting three defensive tackles in this class, which is not a reach, like, you have room on the roster to do that, then I don't mind waiting till pick 100 to get your first defense. If you're going to commit to getting three, you have 11 draft picks. There's room for that. This draft class, that would be awesome. Like, I'm cool with that. But if you're only going to draft two defensive tackles, then you can't wait longer than 75. And if you're only drafting one defensive tackle, then you've got to get one in the first or second round. Like, you need somebody to be there. I would prefer almost to go three defensive tackles. I don't like waiting till pick 100, but it happens sometimes. And sometimes you get, you know, kind of sniped a little bit before you're on the clock, which happened to us. We had TJ Sanders go one pick ahead of us in that epic mock draft that we did at pick 43. It was just like, ah, man, he's gone. That was after we traded back. And for all the fans that keep talking about, man, why don't we trade back, trade back? I think in the second round you can. I think in the second round where this draft is, trade backs are very valuable and much more likely, because it's not the huge cost of falling back from 11 and people giving up, you know, third rounders and future picks. You trade back in the second round and you could pick up a late third round pick. Oh, man, that would make me so happy. But you've got to go get defensive tackles. I think defensive linemen in general, but if you have in your first four picks two defensive linemen, one edge, one defensive tackle, I would just feel off the charts amazingly well. I'd be so happy. Now, we are 1 week out, and you guys got to come party with us. You got to go get your tickets. We're running out. And if you guys are on social media, D'Amador Lenore just shared the 49ers Rush Road Trip Flyer. That's right. Demo is going to be coming to our draft party. I'm so proud and honored. I've been telling you guys, I've been looking for a new favorite player on this 49ers roster because Drake Greenlaw's gone now. And I've been saying Demo's right up there. I don't think I have a choice anymore. Party with the faithful. Let's go. We're going to be at Broadway Studios over in North Beach area from 4 to 9 p.m. or until the draft ends. We might go longer. We rented the place out for the entire evening, so we could stay and party and have a great time. We're going to be there Thursday, and we're going to be there Friday for days one and day two of the draft. D'Amador Lenore, you want to meet him, autograph, all that kind of stuff. That's going to be on day one. We've got big screens, trivia, giveaways, you name it. It's going to be incredible. Day two is going to be awesome. That's for the hardcore draft people. Big screens everywhere, NFL Network, ESPN, plus we're live broadcasting. You are going to be covered. 49ers-centric coverage, nonstop. I'm so pumped, man. Get to meet D'Amador Lenore? What? Go to 49ersrushroadtrip.com. Get your tickets now. All right, do have to say thank you to our sponsors for making this whole event happen, the mattressguyco.com. If you have a mattress you're trying to get rid of, they handle it in an environmentally proper way, recycle it, take care of everything, and it's nothing to you because they come pick it up. So go to the mattressguyco.com. Niners fan, he's going to be there at the party with us. I'm so excited. And then Knees Up Venues, they helped us find Broadway Studios and help us book that and all that stuff and saved us a lot of money. So if you need to book a venue anywhere, Knees Up Venues, support them. Niners fan, again, listener of the show. I love the organic, everybody helping and pitching in. It's so awesome. I love this community. I love this community. I love this community. All right. Let's get to our next topic. Interior pass rush versus run stoppers. Which one do you think that the 49ers prefer more or are in bigger need of? Because, you know they need defensive tackles and we know they need multiple. And this works kind of for pass rusher as well on the defensive inside. What are your thoughts on what the value or what the need is?
I think that they know they need interior pass rush. I think they tried to go away from this a little bit when it came, you know, when they were moving on from DeForest Buckner. They tried to go with Kinlaw, who was going to be a much better run defender, they believed, at the time. And then you've seen them pivot back to Javon Hargrave and say, hey, we need a guy that can pass rush again. You need those guys that can close games out. I think the question mark is, can you find a guy that's good enough stopping the run that can still close games out? Because they've given up a little bit too much. People forget that in 2019, the 49ers gave up 112 yards per game on the ground. That was something they were trying to improve. Last year, it really got out of whack, and they were getting absolutely cooked. So it's finding that balance, and I think that's why you see them meeting with a guy like, you know, Tyleek early on in this draft, is because this is a big, fast individual who can play the one tech. It's going to be a great run defender. I think the key is, can they get both? I think they need to get guys who can stop the run. They have a couple guys on the roster right now, like at Evan Anderson. He's an early down run defender. So if you're pairing a guy like Evan Anderson with a guy like Omar Norman-Lott, it makes sense, especially early on. You pull him off, Evan Anderson off the field, Omar Norman-Lott comes on, he gets after the quarterback on third down, very Rams-esque with Braden Fisk. And I think that is something they can take into account. And that's how you can kind of build a defense without getting one guy that's really great at both, having two players that can handle that role and really help your team out.
Yeah, you need both. You want the three down guy that you could just leave out there because they don't have that. Jordan Elliott's probably the closest thing, and he is such a run game catastrophe. It's like one out of every five plays is good, and it's really good. That one play is really good. It's highlight worthy, but it's four plays of him just getting blown out at duo or combo blocks, and it's just like, yikes. And I still have PTSD. I remember going through the Shanahan press conference where he said he's our best run defender. And I was like, what? Like, what the hell? Then, of course, you know, I get all the Shanahan knows more than you and whatever else. And then I go through and watch film and see this guy literally facing backwards against a double team block on the goal line. Anyway, take that for what it is. I like Jordan Elliott, and I think that he's a rotational player, should not be a starter in today's NFL. He's a starter for us. He's an elite special teamer. It should be a rotational piece. That is where he should be used. And again, I think the only solid foundational piece on that defensive line, like you said, is Evan Anderson, and he can't rush the passer. So your one piece that is a building block is a situational piece. So you pair that with the pass rusher, and then you get your three down guy. That would be ideal. It's hard to do. It is hard to do. No doubt about it. Now let's step away from defensive line. That's enough line talk for now. We'll go back. And, you know, you put this question to me in the notes. Who is the out of nowhere player that the 49ers would be interested in? There's one every single draft, whether it's first round, third round, comp pick, what the hell, you know, that face palm. You know, one of the listeners that I'm going to do this later this week, probably this weekend, a just what the hell draft, a face palm draft, a full mock draft of just, man, what the hell. Who are some players you have in mind that we're not talking about that is just out of left field draft picks for the 49ers?
It's interesting because I think that there is guys all the time that nobody talks about. And finding guys for the 49ers was fun for me because pretty much the draft at this point, everyone starts talking about certain guys at certain positions. But there are some guys, I think, in this draft that just come out of nowhere that you're like, wow, would the 49ers really take somebody like that? And I think that when I looked at overall who was going to be, one of them is actually on Dane Brugler's list, and that was Tez Johnson. I thought that that was just a wild prediction and a guy that would be completely out of nowhere because I think there's a redundancy when you're talking about Jacob Cowing. And Tez Johnson is smaller than Jacob Cowing. He's not as fast as Jacob Cowing, right? I mean, he's tiny, and I get it. The separation skills, all that is there. But the 49ers value blocking. Tez Johnson's not going to block at all. Like, this dude is lucky to get in your way. And so that one was a shock to me, and I think that's how it'd feel. That would be out of left field for Tez Johnson. I never even considered it. And then Dane Brugler put that in there, and I'm like, whoo. That's crazy. So that is for sure one that got my eyebrows up, and I would be very surprised. I just think that doesn't make a lot of sense for the 49ers in this draft at all.
Yeah, he's a horizontal separation guy. So, right, like that goes with Brock Purdy and Perry, guys that can create separation horizontally. He's slow. He's tiny, what it is. But I do like him. Whenever I first saw the testing, I was like, dude, this is undraftable. You can't be small and slow. But then you go back to the tape and you're like, okay, there's a role. This is Trent Taylor still in the NFL. You know, what are we, 9 years later, 8 years later? Like, he's that, at least, I hope. But, you know, I went with a couple first round ones that I could understand. Amika Egbuka. I feel like I like him way more than most. You can never discount Kyle taking a wide receiver, whether he needs one or not, no matter what the needs are elsewhere. Hey, Chris Forster is probably turning that card in. He wants more wide receivers for some strange reason. Josh Connerly Jr., he was on their official meet. I know he's a second-round guy, a lot of people, but I could see, like, would it be crazy if you have, like, Kelvin Banks Jr. on the board and Josh Connerly Jr. goes before him? Like, I would not be shocked at all. The upside, I obviously have Banks higher, but, again, I could understand it. Oh, he just fits what we do and blah, 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 blah. And then I'm going to go probably my biggest dark horse, Colston Loveland. What if the 49ers don't want to extend George Kittle? Now, Colston Loveland is nowhere near George Kittle and how he blocks and whatever else. But Colston Loveland is my tight end one. I do have him ranked higher than Tyler Warren, who I think is amazing as well. But as far as like a tight end that can create separation play outside that would pair perfectly with Brock Purdy, Colston Loveland fits better. If you're asking me for a tight end to pair with Jimmy Garoppolo, Tyler Warren fits better. So, like, again, I don't like any of these picks, but if I've tried to jump into my Kyle Shanahan brain, those are three names that kind of I could understand if, you know, Jed York's, again, tightening the wallet and not going to pay any more cash out. I could understand that pick. I would not like that pick. Any of those kind of ring a bell with you, or you hate them all?
You know, I think it's interesting that you bring up Connerly, because there's people that are talking about Josh Connerly being a first-round pick, and he would be a fit for the 49ers system. And if they went out of the box, potentially, and went with Josh Connerly, because this is the new way that they did draft, is they prefer pass protection over potential run blocking. And so that one wouldn't be crazy. I think another one that you probably would surprise me is if they went Josh Simmons also at 11, even though they met with him at 30. I think they're met with him in their top 30. I think they're preparing in case he falls to 43 and they make a defensive end, you know, pick. And then all of a sudden at 43, they're like, hey, he's still here. Let's go ahead and get him. But yeah, I think that one would be interesting if it ended up being Connerly, because I think it would shock us all. Everyone's been talking about Membu and Campbell and Banks, and all of a sudden those guys, one of those guys or two of those guys on the board, and they went Josh Connerly. That would definitely ruffle some feathers, a lot like Ricky Pearsall last year with Ladd McConkey and Adonai Mitchell, both still on the board, and a lot of people looking at another position with Cooper DeJean. So that would be very interesting if they did that. Yeah, that would definitely kind of raise my eyebrows a lot.
And I always go back to this. The 49ers have the most custom big board of all 32 teams, right? So, like, if you match up every single all 32 teams to what the consensus rankings are, whatever, the 49ers are the most unique. They are the unicorn of the unicorn world. And this is where you get into the Shanahan complex and how arrogant and whatever else, like, he marches to the beat of his own drum. I don't mind that. Draft day does make it difficult because, man, you reach on everybody. Literally everybody is a reach, and I think that trend is going to continue because they value fits and culture fits and guys who love football with cleaner evaluations early, and so they don't mind reaching. Do you remember where you had Ricky Pearsall? I had a late second on him. Where did you have your Ricky Pearsall grade? Do you remember?
Yeah, I had a rank number 51 on my big board.
There you go. And so number 50 is Shamar Stewart this year. Good Lord. Why did I say that? I should not have said that out loud. Tommy, appreciate the super chat. John misses Wonder Bread and Devontae Campbell. He calls Nick Sorensen Wonder Bread. I call him Pet Rock. I'm very happy that those two people are no longer with the 49ers. Don't wish them any ill will. But the worst defensive coordinator in the history of the 49ers, I will stay true to that. And Devondre Campbell never should have been on this team. 49ers panicked when they lost Eric Kendricks, and they compromised guys that love football and went after somebody that didn't fit because they were whatever. And even after they were eliminated from the playoffs, they stuck with them. Even though Dee Winters was on the roster, on the sideline, absolutely just terrible, terrible, terrible. Why you got to bring that up? Why you got to bring that up? Now, let's get to another question that was brought up for just this show. An offensive lineman from Kansas, not Logan Brown. Bryce Cabeldu. Did I say that right? Cabeldu? C-A-B-E-L-D-U-E. Bryce Cabeldu, Kansas, offensive lineman. What do you think about him? What do you know about him, man?
Yeah, so he moved over to left tackle for Kansas this season. I think he projects to playing interior offensive line. He's only got 32.5-inch arms, which is going to take him off almost everyone's board when it comes to playing tackle. But you're talking about another guy that fits when it comes to being a good mover in space, being able to get to the second level. Now, he is more built on aggression and built on power, and he loves to move guys. So this is a very aggressive individual who likes to go downhill quickly, and he gets some movement. And so if you're looking for a hyper-aggressive interior offensive lineman, he's going to be on your radar. He's plenty athletic enough. He played in the zone scheme at Kansas. This dude translates. That's why we talk Logan Brown. That's why we love Dominic Pooney last year. Brown and Pooney have more measurables than Cable Dude does. So when you're looking at that sort of thing, he's not going to measure up. But this is a mid-round pick who I think a lot of teams are going to value at interior offensive line, who can hold up when it comes to anchor, who has enough athleticism to get to the second level and make those blocks, pretty good hips as well to be able to turn on guys. He's a fun watch. I told John earlier, I'd actually come across him watching Logan Brown. I'm like, hey, who is this guy? Is he draft eligible? Once you get into the tape, you realize that, yeah, there's going to be some problems with his aggressiveness. That's going to also lead to some poor technique. He gets a little bit out over his skis, a little bit of balance problems occasionally. And then also his hands are a little wild. He'll get wide. He'll allow defenders to get into his chest. So he has to hone in on techniques, maybe be a little bit more subtle and take some of the aggressiveness out when it comes to initial contact, be more controlled. I think if he did, he could be a solid mid-round pick for an interior offensive line. And definitely, I think a player that a lot of teams are going to look for. He did have a top 30 visit with the Indianapolis Colts as well. So this is a guy that's definitely around the league and kind of on people's radars, even though this is the first time I've ever talked about him on an episode, which is interesting.
Oh, there we go. I like it. You know, I've watched Kansas State, but I was not paying attention to who he was. I did just a little bit, looked him up. He's played a lot, 3,000 plus snaps. He's played 4 out of 5 of the offensive line positions. Definitely the 49ers know about him because of the Pooney evaluation and tape that they've watched. So, you know, another one of those. He's not on my, what did I do? 324 prospects in my draft? Like, not on there. Like, that's going to happen. And so watch the 49ers take him in like the 4th or 5th round. Would that be hilarious? And I love everybody. We're not saying Pearsall was a bad pick. We're saying it was a reach. Ladd McConkey was still on the board. Adonai Mitchell was still on the board. A lot of guys were still. It was a reach, but it doesn't mean it was a miss. Out of 32 teams, Anthony, how many do you think had Pearsall ranked ahead of Ladd McConkey?
I would say probably 5 to 10. You know, I'm guessing that some teams saw him a certain way. I think the 49ers might even as well. I really liked Ricky Pearsall. I have no problems with the draft pick. I think you always have to also take into consideration, I want to get this player. My second round pick is too far to be able to get that guy in the second round. So I'm going to just value him here. A lot of teams are willing to do that. And I don't think there's any problem with that. But I think they looked at Ricky Pearsall and said, at worst, this is going to be a solid double. And I think that's an okay approach, especially if you don't want to miss in the late first round. A lot of people, right? Kyle's famous for those third round, compensatory picks are 4th round picks. Well, a pick at the end of the first round, a lot of people consider that a 2nd round pick as well. So I think that that's where they saw it. And Pearsall is going to be a very solid player for the 49ers. But the question is, did they overdraft? And I think that's a legitimate conversation. Now, if he goes out and he smokes it this year, well, then it's not going to matter, right? The dude is worth the pick that he got picked.
I love the predictions coming out for next year. You know, Pearsall, 800 yards, 7 touchdowns. B. Lauren, 1,200 yards, 12 touchdowns. That would be a top 10 wide receiver in the NFL, the run-heavy offense. It's possible. I would be very, very happy, but I will be remiss if I didn't say Ladd McConkey had 1,150 yards and 7 touchdowns last year. Like, it's not like, you know, whatever. And I saw somebody say Adonai Mitchell's terrible. Oh, Kawachipto, man, way off. Disagree with that. I think the worst quarterback play in the NFL last year was on the Colts. That dude was wide open nonstop, but literally Anthony Richardson's, I would argue, the worst quarterback in the NFL that as a starter, quote unquote. Anyway, but that's okay. We'll see how it. I'm not here to say, like, dude, I literally traded for Ricky Pearsall in my dynasty league of record. Like, I am very high on Ricky Pearsall, and I think that was a hit. But again, you have to kind of disassociate yourself from 1 year to back before they drafted. And so, like, where were you before they drafted? Now you know what you know. And yeah, did Ricky Pearsall have a great year? No, you had all the injuries, the shooting. It fought through all of them, which is incredible. I love Ricky Pearsall. That's not what I'm saying at all. I'm just saying the team tends to reach. I think that pick was a major reach. Doesn't mean it was wrong, and it seems like it's a hit. How many teams now would take Ladd McConkey over Ricky Pearsall? I would argue almost every single one of them. Like, that Ladd McConkey was basically a Pro Bowl wide receiver as a rookie, like for a playoff team, right? Like, am I crazy here?
No, I mean, Ladd McConkey had a great season. And, you know, I think it just comes down to the eye of the beholder. And, you know, when you're looking at certain things for, you know, wide receivers, I think that Ricky Pearsall was a little bit different than Ladd McConkey. Ladd McConkey is definitely a guy that creates a little bit more in open space than Ricky Pearsall. But I love Pearsall's ability to go up into traffic and make tackles. I think that is something that's going to set him apart. The fact that he's fearless over the middle of the field is something I love. And I'm sure that's what Kyle was looking at as well. When you start seeing the things that he can do in that area, I don't think Ladd's as good when it comes to catching the ball in traffic, but if he's got space, he's going to make plays. So I like Pearsall a lot, and I think Pearsall is going to have a very good season. I have no doubts that now that he's going to be past all the things that happen, this dude's going to go out and show out. I think it's also okay to say that the 49ers drafted him early, but they had to, because if they take him in the second round, they don't get Renardo Green. So what does that mean for the third round? Does that mean you take Renardo Green and you don't get Dominic Pooney? So the way that they drafted ended up working. And so we got to remember that when we're talking about this. And I know, John, that you're not saying anything about, you know, where he was drafted. You're just saying, like, hey, at the time it was a reach. Now we understand it, but it had to work this way for them to get the players they got. And I think you brought up on your show yesterday that they had basically five guys out of that draft that were really solid. And I think that that is exactly what you're looking for. Now, can Ricky become what people are saying in the comment or, you know, in the chat? I sure hope so. 1,200 yards in a season, that would be phenomenal. If he could have 750 to 800 this year, I think people will go crazy for what Ricky Pearsall could be. So I like the pick overall. I was a fan of it when it happened, but I was surprised that it happened at 31. That's just, I think that's easy way to say it.
Yeah, and again, if he had 1,200 yards and 12, Ayuk hasn't done that. Like Ayuk was five touchdowns away from that. So, like, that's super high. I think there were probably only four wide receivers that did that last year in the entire NFL. That would be badass. I would love it. I love Pearsall, man. I freaking love Pearsall. Like, don't take this as slight. Like, I think that this is one of the things that is a problem kind of with social media. Kind of if you criticize anything, then you're a hater. No, I believe in nuanced football takes. And even as a coach, and you could attest to this too, your best player on your team, you're critiquing. Your best player on your team, I'm critiquing more than anybody else in that locker room. And I would tell my player that, like, my captain, my guy, the best. I'm going to be harder on you in practice every single day. When we go through film, I'm going to be mean to you first and last so that everybody knows nobody is safe. That's just my persona. And so everybody can improve. And I like Ricky Pearsall. I really, really do. I was very frustrated last year whenever he was injured all the time. But no, I freaking love that dude. And I'm super excited about what he's going to bring to the future. Now, let's switch topics as we head out. Silent, appreciate the super chat, my friend. Where do you think the problem is? Is it too much coach input on prospects early? What has led to so many early misses but late round hits? Scouts cooking late? What is this? So, a couple things. Let me bracket this conversation. I love this question, Silent. The 49ers are a top eight drafting team since Kyle Shanahan showed up. Top eight. Are there misses? Yes. Usually about a 50% hit rate across the NFL in the first round. After that, about 30%. You get late, maybe 10% hit rate. The 49ers have hits everywhere, including the first round. Everybody talks about how we're so bad in the first round. I disagree with that sentiment whenever you look at other NFL teams. And this is probably the problem of just everybody focusing in on just the 49ers, which there's nothing wrong with that. But you lose some of the, I don't know, perspective of what the NFL draft is. So here is, let me rephrase this question for you, Ant. Why do you attribute the misses, or who do you attribute the misses to in this process? And who do you attribute the hits late in this process?
Well, I think when it comes to late, you got to give credit to the scouts. I mean, they're the ones who put in the work when it comes to finding these guys. You know, I mean, there were an area scout, you know, that found a Brock Purdy. You know what I mean? And then the coaches signed off on it. I think the 49ers have learned through this process. I think when they came in 2017, you know, John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan had a certain approach to the way that they were going to handle the draft. And really, they were trying to turn this thing around as quickly as possible. Let's get dynamic impact players that are going to be able to make some plays. I think through time, they developed what their defense was actually going to look like. Also, the type of players that they needed to go out and grab. And they started figuring out that it was better to not go with complete projection, but to get guys that were going to be consistent. And that's when you listen to the coaches. They always talk about consistency. And you know this, and I know this from coaching. I'd rather have a consistent player than a guy that's going to pop, you know, one of eight plays and make a big play. It's like, no, I want the guy that's going to be consistent. That's going to help us, you know, get our job done consistently and get off the field on defense or on offense, get the first downs. So I think they started evaluating differently. I think it's okay for there to be misses because everyone misses in the first round. All you have to do is go through the NFL draft every year, and there are just teams that miss. I mean, look at the 2021 draft. Pretty much every team missed on quarterback in the entire first round.
Everybody. And so, five. That's five misses. Five.
That's going to happen. You're going to have evaluations go wrong. The key is how many times can you hit in the draft the way the 49ers did last year with five contributors. That's going to be the key. If you look at Bill Walsh, they weren't all phenomenal drafts, but there were some that were so good, they helped this team move forward. 81, 86, so good. So when you hit, you got to hit good. But I do think the draft, the scouts have been really good for the 49ers in mid-rounds with all the guys they've hit, Hufanga, Lenore, you know, all the guys there. And I think the coaches being involved now, I think does make it more collaborative and everyone's kind of together. And I think you're getting a more consistent draft process now than you ever got before. And trial and error is the way you get it done.
Yeah, I like that. And I just think it's a process. And, you know, one of my favorite things, like I see people talking about, like, man, Kyle Shanahan doesn't change. He's too arrogant. You cannot look at the 49ers draft process and say they haven't changed their process. It has changed dramatically from 2017 to now, to stay away from injured players, to stay away from inexperienced players, to stay away from off-field character players, to doubling up on certain positions of need, to, like, and it's not even an Adam Peters thing. Everybody wants to give credit to whoever is gone, right? You remember when Mike McDonald left or McDaniels left, and everybody's like, oh, Shanahan can't do it. And it's like, oh, wait a second. It wasn't him at all. Now McDaniel's, you know, struggling, whatever. Like, no, nah, man. This is Kyle Shanahan's thing, and he has final say on almost everything. It literally hired the GM by himself. Whatever he says goes, and misses are going to happen. No doubt about that. Now, I do like this. Craig, appreciate the super chat, my friend. What do you guys think about trading 11 all the way out of the first for the Bears pick 39 and 41? So I pulled up the Jimmy Johnson trade chart. The 49ers 11th pick is worth 1,250 points. If you add up 39 and 41, it's right at 1,000. So it's a little short. So I think what would have to happen is the Bears would have to add a player or a future third rounder or something. And again, I do think teams are going to be taking a discount when trading back because not very many teams are wanting to trade up. I would love this. Again, I would have to add something. I would not do it for 39 and 41. I'm fine falling back that far. I know I'm probably in the minority here. I don't love the top end of this draft, and I think the guy you're going to get at 11 is really, really close to the guy that you're going to get at 39. Ant, yay or nay? Are we entertaining this offer, or do we hate it?
I don't hate it, but I do have concerns about the type of player, your type of players you're going to get at 39 and 41, right? I mean, If that happened, you're going to get 39, 41, 43, potentially that you could target some key players. And it's going to be, what are you going to get it with those players? You know, what is the big difference between what you're getting at 11 to 39, I think is the question mark. So if you're getting like a Landon Jackson, a Donovan,
that's what I was going to say.
What are those guys at 39? Like, okay. Like if you think that that's a possibility, that makes sense, especially if you're going to go Donovan Jackson, you know, at 41 and then 43, you're going to get another defensive tackle. I wouldn't hate it because I think the value's there. I'm just nervous about that far of a drop and then missing out on some key players and feeling like you didn't get an impact player. So that's one of the question marks because I do think there's some impact players early on in this draft that can make a difference on the team. But if you felt like those guys are going to fall You know, you don't get Mike Green at 11 because you have whatever concerns you'd fall back, but you get Donovan Ezeraku or Landon Jackson. Ezeraku is very Mike Green-esque with the way he bends the corner and plays. To me, that would make sense. I just think that's a long drop. And I wonder what the kicker is, right? What's the kicker?
It's got to be like a future third or something. I mean, if they threw in their third this year, and so if you got like point wise, it matched. Like if you add pick 72, which is their third rounder, that's 230 points. It's almost the exact point match. So would Chicago give up 2 seconds and a third for the first? Then I'm saying hell yeah. Like, yeah, let's roll, baby, because let's just throw names out there. So if you stayed at 11 and let's say you took Mikal Williams, who both of us think is a highly likely pick, right? Is Mikal Williams worth more than Landon Jackson, TJ Sanders, and Omar Norman Lott? Like, which one would you rather have out of those three?
Obviously, you want volume of players, especially because they impact more positions. So in that case, plus I got to admit, Mikal Williams is somebody I watch pretty consistently. And I still have a lot of worries about him bending the corner. So that is something
that
kind of hangs in the balance where I'm not as over on this player as I think a lot of people are.
Yeah. And, you know, sticking with the trade conversation, there's an article going around. I do not consider it accurate of the 49ers trying to trade up into the top six. Let me just say this. Here's what happens. Every single team talks to every single team and organizes trades throughout the entirety of the draft, including trading up to number six. So, like, those conversations happen. So do I think John Lynch calls the Raiders and say, hey, possible trade-up situation, what would it take for us to jump up if a certain player fall? If Abdul Carter, you know, fell, why not? And it's funny, you know, when we did the Epic Mock Draft, I literally had to do this. And I contacted every single GM, whether it was, you know, and you try to figure those things out. Like, okay, what would it take? What would it take? Doesn't mean you're going to do it, but you want to have those parameters in place because the draft goes so damn quick. And the teams will say, no matter what happens, we are not trading back. Okay, cool. Then you call number seven. Then you call number eight. Then you call number nine. Because what if? What if Abdul Carter does fall? What if a Laremy Tunsil situation does happen? You have to be ready for all those things. And one of my favorite things about the Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch era, they will take the call on anybody. And Kyle Shanahan said, I guarantee you John Lynch would take the call if somebody wanted to trade me. Like, that's the way it should be. We are going to entertain everything if it makes this a better football team. I don't give a damn who it is. Everything's on the table. And I feel like that is an appropriate way. How do you see the quote-unquote rumors? I don't put a lot of validity to what was said out there. But what are your thoughts about the 49ers trading up and entertaining this idea?
Yeah, it's smokescreen season, right? I mean, this is kind of, things start coming out. 49ers are interested in these players. They're interested in trading up. They're interested in trading back. And a lot of that's, like you said, just the normal conversations that are going to happen. And you're not just trying to find out what it would take to move up if, like you said, an Abdul Carter potentially fell, which I think is the target everyone would be looking for, but also what other teams are asking for. So that way, if you're in a situation at 11, you find out what everyone's asking for ahead of you. You can kind of be in the same realm to be able to say, hey, this is what it's going to cost. Plus, if everyone's wanting to trade back and it's going to take a little bit less to move up, you might say, you know what, now it's worth it because they're not charging as much as they would have in past years. I can move up and get ahead of somebody that might take the player that I'm really interested in. So you have to do your due diligence. I think this is probably much to do about nothing and there's probably not going to happen. But I do like the idea because Abdul Carter does not plan on going past four. He did not take a top 30 visit with anyone that wasn't picking out of the top four. But you never know. Weird things happen. And if he fell to six and you had already had conversations with the Raiders, potentially you could jump up there and get an Abdul Carter. And I don't think anyone would complain about walking away with a guy like Abdul Carter opposite of Nick Bosa.
Yeah, I would not be upset. And things happen. You know, I've said since the start of this process, I don't want the 49ers trade up. But if they did, it would be for Abdul Carter or Mason Graham. That's it. I would not trade up to six for Mason Graham. But if he fell, you know, to 8-9, okay, now we're talking. So, yeah, you definitely have to do your due diligence there. And, yeah, so I don't think they're going to trade up, though. Yeah, I just don't see it. They need more picks, not fewer picks, which is crazy because they have the most picks. But that's what happens when you punt on free agency and just try to save cash. That's where you are. So that's going to do it for us today. Again, just a couple things I need you to do. Number one, you need to go over to 49ers Cutback channel. Leave your question for Ask Ant tomorrow's show on 49ers Cutback only. And then predict the pick. The competition is open. I need you to email your 10 players you think the 49ers will draft. 49ersrush.pickthepicks@gmail.com. Ant, anything else before we head out of here?
Nope, that's it. I'm just excited that I know in 1 week the draft party's here. I'm going to be out there at Broadway Studios. It's going to be a lot of fun experiencing everything with the faithful. So if you haven't got your tickets yet, go get your tickets for, you know, the Rush Road Trip, the draft party, day one and two. D'Amore Lenore in the house, the hyena. Does it get much better than that? I don't know, man. That's pretty awesome. So everyone should be looking forward to this. I know it's going to be a great time. And I know I'm looking forward to being in the house with John and everybody else. Is going to be great. So go get your tickets. Don't miss out on a great time to experience the draft party with all the 49ers faithful. It's a unique experience that's so much fun.
Yeah, it will be live from there if you're out of town and can't make it, but not the entire first day. So we'll go live probably around pick 5 or 6, and we'll be live for like an hour, hour and a half through the 49ers pick. We're going to try to get Demo on, get his thoughts on his new teammate, which would be really, really cool. And then day two will be live nonstop. So we'll be live from the first pick to the last pick, which the 49ers have, pick 100, right around the end. We'll be live all day, just like always. But so anyway, that's kind of what it is. But that's going to do it for us. Thank you so much, Ant. And until next time, stay strong, faithful.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Some matches are temporary, but your privacy shouldn't be. With Line 2, you get a second phone line just for dating. No need to share your personal number until you're ready. You can chat, text, and even block numbers, all while keeping things fun and private. It's perfect for online dating, blind dates, or just keeping things light. When you're ready to move on, Line 2 lets you cut ties without any drama. Dating should be fun and carefree. Line 2 keeps it that way. Ready to date on your terms? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.